Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. This is Frank McKay, but more importantly, a very talented man joins us, an actor, entertainer, impressionist, solo song stylist, Richard Halpern. Richard, how are you?
I'm well, Frank. How are you, sir?
Good. How's that for an introduction?
I loved it. That's great.
That kind of covers a lot of...
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. Well, that covers a lot of things, and you are a multi-talented artist, and if anyone hasn't checked you out... Actually, as we get started, why don't you give people your website in case they want to follow along with what you do, because you do so many things. Give us a website.
Absolutely. It's richardhalpern.info, and I'll spell that. That's R-I-C-H-A-R-D... HALPERN.info, INFO.
Now it's,
and you can go there, all things Richard Halpern.
Now it's been a while since you've been on the show. You were with us way early on when the station here on Long Island just started, and you know, other people will be hearing this as well. But let's focus on something local. You have a show coming up. In a few days, July 25th, at Molloy College, and it's a nice facility from what I understand. Let's talk about that a little bit. What it's Irving Berlin, the music of Irving Berlin, but you tell it better. Go ahead.
Yes, it's a tribute to the music of Irving Berlin, and it's entitled The Melody Lingers On, The Songs of Irving Berlin, and I'll be featured in the cast. We have Lee Merriweather. Is going to be there. Our good friend Frank Bastille is going to be there, and Sarah Wright. She's a Broadway actress. She was the original Joanna in Sweeney Todd. And our good friend Judy Mark is going to be joining us, and a cast of thousands, as I like to say. We have a group of wonderfully talented individuals who round out the rest of the cast and the singing group, and I had the pleasure of working with these people last year. The name of the group is South Shore Theatricals, and we did a tribute to summer, like a summer at the shore, South Shore summer. Say that 10 times fast, South Shore summer, last year in the Oceanside. And then this, you're correct when you say this is a very different, newer venue, and it's a big theater. It's going to be wonderful. We're very excited about it. And as you say, it's July 25th, which is Saturday. And it starts at 8 o'clock. And I hope you can come out and see it. It's the Madison Theater on the campus of Molloy College.
Yeah, well, everyone should check this out. It sounds wonderful. And let me remind everyone of who we're speaking to. If you're just tuning in or just turning on your radio, this is Frank McKay. But more importantly, Richard Halpern is our very special guest. And again, he's an entertainer, a song stylist, an impressionist, actor. He does a little bit of everything. And you've got your eye on nostalgia all the time. I mean, you live in the moment, but you do have an appreciation for the folks who have come before you. And let's talk a little bit about that. Where did your appreciation for, and we're going way back to the 20s, where did that come from? Is that from your parents?
Well, it was even though my parents did have a little bit of a show business background, my mother did, it was never something that they inspired in me themselves. I lost my father when I was quite young. Had he lived longer, I'm certain there would have been more of a theatrical influence from him. But I really didn't get it from my family. I just got it from hearing things. And then I first started singing for the nostalgia years, songs of Al Jolson. Jolson has been the catalyst to so many entertainers. And the first thing I wanted to do was be Al Jolson. And then from there, I became, you know, who I was. I made my own style or something like that. But you talk to a lot of the great ones, you know, like Judy Garland, Jerry Lewis, Wayne Newton, these people, they all started singing Jolson songs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just went on from there. And I think I was one of the of that ilk.
What did your folks do? I know you said your dad passed early. What was his occupation?
He was a manufacturer's representative. He was basically in sales and promotion of different manufacturers. And my mother was the housewife by the time, you know, she married him. And then she, when he passed away, she went to work and stuff. She did the regular working jobs and things like that. But early on, she sang with Danny Thomas.
Wow.
When he was still known as Amos Jacobs back in Detroit at the beer gardens where they would go, and she sang with him. And I think that's exciting.
Yeah, well, that is. Did you ever get the chance to meet Danny Thomas?
You know, I almost did. I was a guest actor on his television show. He had a television show in the 80s called One Big Family, where he played like the grandfather of this show. And I got to guest star on one of the episodes, but unfortunately it was one of the episodes that he was not on that episode. But I really do wish that I would have had a chance to speak with him and say about my mother. And I said, you remember my mom, and blah, blah, blah. I did never get that chance. I Don Adams would say, missed it by that much.
Well, yeah, that's a shame. I never met Danny either. I've met his daughter a couple of times, Marlo Thomas. And
I bet she's very nice.
Very, very, very nice. And but that's a good showbiz family there. But that's interesting that your mother got to sing with him. And how much was she singing? Was she doing this for a very long time? Was she doing it professionally for a long time? What was her history in music?
Well, that I couldn't tell you. She just basically said this is what she did, and she didn't get more specific than that. I don't think she kept the record of the different venues and the different things. So I don't imagine that she did it for very long. She was no longer with us, unfortunately.
You
could ask her that. She would have made a great interview.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, because of that, because your mother had this great experience and you really didn't know much about it, is it important for you to, you know, as a performer, as a professional, as a person, whatever, to kind of have a documentation of what you've done? Did that have any effect on you? The fact that, you know, she had this great experience, and there's very little known about it, you know, and it's because of the times, you know, there was no internet and there was no, no way to keep track. But is it important for you as a performer to kind of keep track of what you've done?
Oh, absolutely. No, I absolutely believe that. And I keep a record of just about everything that I do, everything I've ever done. I have a list of it. I think I have a copy of every resume that I ever made. You know, and as it changes, you know, I still keep a copy of the one previous to that one. I have a lot of photographs. I have a lot of anytime I work on a television show, I have the script. Or the sides, which is the portions of the script that pertain to me, whatever they give out. You know, they used to send out full scripts and this, and then now they just send out, like, the pieces that pertain to you or links to the script online, and you just read, you know, your part and stuff. They used to have messengers that would come out and bring the changes in the script before you'd shoot. They don't do that anymore because, of course, as you said, the advent of the internet, everything has changed. I do think it's very, very important to keep a record of what one does as best you can. And even as good as you do that, there's still always something that you forget. And someone will come up to you and say, I remember when you performed at this or this. And I said, I don't remember that. They go, oh, yeah, I do remember that now. And, in fact, the other night, I just saw some photographs of me at some event. I don't know where this was. I have no idea where this was. I have to talk to the people that put it up and say, where did we do this?
You know what that means? That means you're working a lot.
Yeah, but that's why it's important to keep a record, because if you get something, so I don't remember doing this or what. Look at my records. It was this type of a thing. Yeah, and I do keep all my handbills, any flyers I ever made for shows, which are fewer and far between now, because now instead of, you know, the old days, you would make up a postcard, and you'd run off flyers at the copy place, and you'd stick them up all over town, you know, and you'd mail out postcards to your mailing list, and you'd stand there licking stamps and sticking labels. Well, the internet has taken care of that. It's rare that a lot of people send out paper cards for certain things. A lot of people just go on to Facebook, or they have a mailing list, or they do that, because that's most of the receipts and invitations and announcements that I receive from other performers are something that I get online. So it has changed. So it's hard to keep something in your hand that it doesn't exist in your hand. Let's print it out. But after I stopped making handbills, I did keep track of all the posters that were printed up of my things. I there is a record there of those things, yeah.
Frank McKay here, once again reminding folks that our special guest today is Richard Halpern, and Richard is just a wonderful actor, entertainer, an impressionist, and a song stylist. He does a little bit of everything. Richard, you touched on a name that after so many years of him being gone, is still talked about. And I interviewed so many people, and the name Al Jolson comes up. Donnie Most, for instance. You know Donnie from Happy Days fame, right?
Sure, I do.
And you ask him what his big influences, and you expect him to say Sinatra, which, of course, he says, and he says Bobby Darin. You know, he's doing this this big band, vocal show out there.
Yeah, but he just did something out here at the Catalina.
Yeah.
Bar and Grill in Hollywood.
Yeah. And he talks about Jolson as being...
I didn't know that. That's wonderful.
As being an influence, and so many other people have. What is it about Al Jolson that that has somehow withstood the test of time?
Well, there's people that are timely, and there are people that are timeless. And Jolson was someone who is timeless. And even though he is no longer walking this earth or everything, his legacy remains timeless for the entertainer that he was. And this is somebody that, you know, anything you read about him, because there's people very few and far between that actually saw him in person, but they said you had to see him in person. He was the greatest thing to ever set foot on any stage, anytime, and he was this and that. I know Baby Peggy, who was a silent screen star as a little child back in the 20s. That's Diana Sarah Carey, and she's well into her 90s, but it's very, very loose. But she remembers Al Jolson. She remembers seeing him. She remembers being on the same bill as he was, and she said, yeah, he was something in person. But she also mentioned that this film of him, The Plantation Act, which actually was a short subject that predated The Jazz Singer by a year, was basically an experiment with the same sound-on-film process from Warner Brothers, known as Vitaphone, that they wound up making the full-length picture, The Jazz Singer, with. They did a whole bunch of these short subjects before. And I remember asking her about that short, and she said, yes, that was about as close as him being on stage as you could get. And so there was a little validity in that. That's great. I'm so glad I got that validated from her. But about him, he had this voice, he had this delivery that just surpassed anybody else, and he inspired every entertainer that came after him. People say, you know, well, who's the greatest entertainer? Well, Elvis was the greatest, or Judy Garland was the greatest, Frank Sinatra was the greatest. Ask those people who the greatest was. They would say Jolson. And that's I found that to be true. And then to hear that Donnie Most is saying that, I'm very happy to hear that. I was not aware of that. And it's good to know that his influence reaches across the hands of time to be able to influence singers today and entertainers today. To try to live up to just at least one iota of what he had, which is basically what we all try to do in our singing, especially I do. I mean, I do some Jolson in my show. I do some Jolson-esque things in my show. And there's a hint of it in my delivery. Sometimes when I perform, like, for the International Al Jolson Society, you do, like, a Jolson-specific show, and you try to sound and look like him as much as you can. I kind of look like him now. I don't mean blackface and everything.
Right.
I'm quite pale. And people say to me, did you cut your hair on purpose to look like Al Jolson? I say, no, it just fell out on its own.
Let's touch on something that you just said there. And again, for those who don't know, the Jazz Singer was the first, for all intents and purposes, the first sound film, full featured length motion picture, 1927, I believe, right? It won the Best Picture.
That's correct. You're very correct.
Right. And Jolson was the star there. But you mentioned the blackface. Now, political correctness I assume wouldn't allow a Jolson impersonator to put on blackface nowadays. I mean, is that accurate?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. Now, for what I do, if I'm just doing concerts, or as my friend Julie Shepherd likes to say, concertizing, you don't do something like that. There's no reason to do it. Maybe in England. England has a much more, I don't want to say lenient. I don't know if that's the right word.
No, but
they allow that. That's something that's more common.
Relaxed would be the word. They may be more relaxed.
Maybe that's the right, yeah. Because there are entertainers that do that over in England just for the sake of doing it, putting on minstrel shows and putting on... Now, just for our younger viewers or listeners, blackface, let's explain what that is. That's basically a form of satire that has been around since the beginning of theater in the Greek times, when people would try to dress or assume the look, sound, and mannerisms of another culture. Usually somebody or some culture that is current for that time, and they're making a statement about that culture. Well, blackface, of course, came about after, in the 1800s, maybe before then, I don't know. I'm not that versed on it. But, yeah, it was basically a thing that would satire the people that were black or the slaves or whoever. They did that, and by the time... show business in the early 20th century came about, that became a staple. In fact, George M. Cohan wrote a book. It was a vaudeville handbook, and he wrote the foreword in this book. This is a book from about 1914 or 1912. I forget what year I saw this book. And that was all, and according to him, that was the best thing you could do, is put on a good blackface thing. And so Jolson, he wasn't making fun or making a joke or trying to, lampoon any of the black people or black characters that were around. He was believable. He played it straight. His character was named Gus. And this character that he played in several Broadway shows made him the star that he became. And the reason is because, as I said, he was not making fun of people. He was really this black person. And it's funny because you see that character all through history. You go back to King Lear. In King Lear, you've got the fool. The fool happens to be the smartest person in the play. And he speaks in riddles, and he speaks with asides to the audience. And he's the only one that truly loves King Lear all the way. And, of course, the character of him is everybody's picking on him, making fun of him because he's this subservient and lower-class citizen, but he's the smartest one in the play. The show, a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, the Zero Mostel character. He is a slave, but he is the smartest one in the show, and he's the one that is helping the families and making all the love arrangements and going back and forth and working all the deals. Look at Hogan's Heroes. Hogan's Heroes, Colonel Hogan was playing the fool in the eyes of the Nazis, but he was the one running all the guns back and forth, and he was smarter than anybody else in that play, and was really the kind of unsung hero of that. And Jolson is doing the same thing, and this is the thing that it hasn't changed if you look at it that way. Well, because that's exactly what Jolson was doing.
Well, let me jump in and remind folks once again. We got about a minute and a half only. Time flies, Richard. With Richard Halpern, this is Frank McKay. And again, Richard Halpern is a wonderful actor, entertainer, song stylist, impressionist. He does just great things. If you get a chance to see him live, do so. But definitely check him out on July 25th. And Richard, give us the information again.
Okay, July 25th, it's the Irving Berlin tribute at the Madison Theater on the campus of Beloit College. It's called The Song, The Melody Lingers On. I'm sorry, The Melody Lingers On, all right? A tribute to Irving Berlin. It's going to be Saturday, July 25th, which that's right around the corner, isn't it?
Right around the corner.
That's it. So you can go to my website if you like, richardhalpern.info. All the information is there. Or just look it up online, Madison's Theater. NY.org, I think, is the box office for that. But, yeah, so it should be being publicized all over the place by now. So hope you can come out and hear some wonderful Irving Berlin tunes from the teens and the 20s and 30s, and I'll be singing some of those, and I'm very happy to do so.
Richard Halpern, real quick, again, Frank McKay here. We got about 30 seconds left. Give us your August 2nd date.
August 2nd, out here in Los Angeles at the Cicada Club. All 1920s to 1930s, Richard Halpern's Hollywood Cavalcade.
Frank McKay signing off. I want to thank everyone for listening in. Richard Halpern has been our guest. Frank McKay here. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.